Okay, now we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going off-piste. Ready?
Off-piste into a land of certain certainties. The CIA killed JFK, well, that's obvious. Paul McCartney is dead, probably done in by chemtrails. Jet fuel melting steel. Are you kidding? Then there are these so-called moon landings.
Columbia, this is Houston, AOS, over.
Houston, Columbia, on the high gate, over.
Roger, the EVA is progressing beautifully. They're setting up the flag now. I guess you're about the only person around that doesn't have TV coverage of the scene.
That's all right, I don't mind a bit.
Hilarious, the moon. Who are they trying to kid, right? There is no doubt that conspiracy theories have a certain allure, possibly now more than ever. Being utterly convinced of the absurdly implausible is one of the things that the modern world does best. Just look at the irresistible rise of Donald Trump. What if there was a surefire way of killing a conspiracy theory dead, a stake through the heart? Well, good news. Meet Dr. David Robert Grimes. He's a physicist. He has devised a mathematical formula that puts conspiracy theories in their place. And he joins us now via Skype from Oxford University in the UK. David, welcome.
Oh, good morning.
This is important and necessary work.
Well, to an extent, there's a humorous side to it too, but there is a more serious motivation for it, and that is, I mean, I'm as one of my other careers is a science writer, mm-hmm. and I find that if you're trying to convince people of, say, the importance of vaccination or the reality of climate change or things like this, there is a backbone, a conspiracist narrative that people throw up there and simply go, well, science is a big conspiracy, or you're in on it, or often I get accused of being in on it, if only I'm too inept for something like that. But you get these accusations, and it made me curious, could you try to model the likelihood, even if you make conspirators very, very good at keeping secrets, can you work out how many people would have to be involved and then kind of estimate what the failure rate would be for some of the big science conspiracies?
Okay, and you took four examples here, the moon landing and the idea that it's faked, the belief
yeah,
that...
Yeah, it's a very popular one, all right.
The moon, I mean, come on. The belief that climate change is a fraud, the belief that vaccines cause autism, and the belief that pharmaceutical companies have suppressed a cure for cancer. These are big-ticket conspiracy ideas.
They're big ones, and the reason I picked them specifically is that it's relatively easy to estimate the number of people involved. Well, I say easy, it's still a bit tricky, but at least you can get a measure. The thing about science is because everyone is testing each other and you're trying to falsify things and make sure that no one is cheating, that to get scientists to all conspire on something, you would literally need everyone in a particular field to decide they were sticking to one story. Now, anyone who's worked with academics will tell you that's like herding cats. We love disagreeing. So when you get scientific consensus on an issue and people say, it's a conspiracy, I want it to work out. Okay, let's pretend it is. Let's play devil's advocate. Let's crunch the numbers and find out if it actually holds. And I found for the big ticket science conspiracies, it would be incredibly, incredibly unlikely they would sustain more than a couple of years, even if you imagine the conspirators are more dedicated than the NSA to concealing their secrets.
Now, for the math nerds listening, crunch the numbers for us. How does your formula work? What's the equation?
It's relatively straightforward, in fact. All I do is you assume per person in the conspiracy, per unit time, there's some very, very small but non-zero chance of failure. Now, of course, it's really hard to estimate that from the literature. But what you could do, and what I did, was I looked at things like the Edward Snowden prism revelations, worked out how many people should have known, worked out the time needed to failure, and you pull out a parameter. And then I said, you know what, let's make the conspiracies even better. Let's say they are better at keeping a secret than the NSA. Let's give them the best chance that you can give them. And then just put in the number needed. And the model also factors in the number needed and the time required. And when you crunch these through and let the model run, you see that very quickly, just because of a sheer number of people involved, even if these people are amazing secret keepers overall, they will eventually be whistleblowing or some kind of clumsy mishap that allows a leak to happen. And it's very, very unlikely these conspiracies will sustain.
Dr. David Robert Grimes has come up with a way of testing through mathematics some of the most prominent conspiracy theories that bedevil popular public conversation. I mean, David, the numbers around, for example, well, let's take one of yours, the moon landing. I mean, talk us through the maths on that. I mean, that it's a long time ago. That secret, the secret is clearly dying with some people as we speak, and yet.
I looked at that possibility too, that if you have a single event conspiracy and the conspirators just die off, is it more like, and of course, in theory, it's, that's a better way to get away with conspiracy. Do something once is better than keeping it going constantly. However, even when you factor that in, this sheer number you would have need, I think, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head what I actually found from the NASA archives, I think peak employment around the 60s was 411,000 people. So when you put those numbers in, you can't keep a secret very well. We even know from politics, everything gets out eventually, even with a few handful of people. So putting those numbers in and even treating these people like super, super secret keepers, it just doesn't stack up. Within 3 years, 3 to 4 years, you'd expect that conspiracy to fail. And given that it's been a lot more than 3 or 4 years since the moon landings happened, I think we can say that one is safely not a viable belief.
See, I would have expected that the guy who was delivering the pizzas to the back lot where they filmed the moon landings would eventually crack. You know, I mean, how could you keep that? And not only
would they have cracked, people will crack with documentation. If you look at whistleblowers, that's exactly what happens. Edward Snowden walks out not just with an accusation, but with documents. Frederick Whitehurst, when he revealed the FBI scandal, came out with the story and the documents. Or when the Tuskegee syphilis experiment was done, I think it was Peter Buxton came out with the documentation to say, hey, look what's happened. So it wouldn't just be a tall tale. People would come forward with enough evidence to actually blow the whole thing apart.
And yet, David, the conspiracy theories persist. I mean, the lack of belief simply inspires the people who are convinced of the conspiracy.
Well, that's it. It becomes, the lack of evidence becomes for some people a form of evidence. They say, but that's what the government wants you to believe. That's why they... I've got 670 odd emails today accusing me of being in on every conspiracy you care to mention. And I confined the paper solely to scientific conspiracies because you need a number to make this estimate. But even then, you're not going to convince people who really, really are dedicated believers. But what you might do with something like this is reassure people who've heard these ideas and are wondering if they're viable or not, whether they should, you know, take it seriously or not, and particularly if it's climate change or vaccination or things that can affect our lives. And I think from this paper, they can safely rest assured that there is not a big science conspiracy, and that can be kind of disregarded.
I'm assuming that since you wrote this paper, you've been keeping off Facebook and social media in general. What has been the response?
I was, you know what, just this evening I decided not to be on Twitter for a while. It's been a lot of very positive coverage. It's been very, very good. But you've also got a lot of angry people you might call cranks, I guess. And then you have the armchair people that want to find flaws, or they think they can do it a different way, or they, you know, and half the time their objections don't really make sense. And I'm not arguing with them. So I think I have a real day job where I do cancer research. This has been a nice sidetrack. I'm going back to my real job. And
there's nothing like being absorbed in conspiracies to detain you from your day job, David.
I've actually shown up every day and just kind of done in the evening.
You're a trooper.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I still have to make a paycheck somewhere if Big Pharma aren't going to pay me, right?
What is it about our life and times that gives conspiracy theories their currency now? I mean, there's a lot of people inclined to this who want to believe that things are being withheld from us and that we are being conspired against.
That's a really good question. And I think it veers into psychology, which, I mean, I had the help of two or three psychologists when I was doing the paper. And I don't want to speculate too much because it's outside of my area, but I believe it gives people a sense of narrative. It gives people a just-so story for something they perceive. So instead of things being a series of happenstance and situational things, it becomes an overarching narrative. And for some people, even if that arch is a negative one, it's one that makes more sense to them than the fact that everything is probably just a little bit random.
I wonder how they begin. What prompts the idea that they never landed on the moon?
I honestly don't know, and it's very, very enduring. I think 7% of Americans still believe in it, and up to 20% of people in the UK, which I found interesting. So it's a hard one to call. I think you'd need to talk to a very well-studied psychologist to work that one out, because that's way above my pay grade.
The truth, David, as they say, is probably out there. I mean, there is...
It may be out there, but you can lead horses to water. It's still difficult to make them drink sometimes.
It's a paradox of our time, is it not? I mean, there has never been a better access to information, better access to evidence, and yet simultaneously we have never been more inclined to disbelieve.
I think that's a fair summation of events, all right, yes.
David, thank you. Don't go back to Twitter, but if you do want to find Dr. David Robert Grimes on Twitter, you can, at Dr. G 1985.
You might want to give me a few days. Thanks very much.
David, thank you. Dr. Grimes is from Oxford University. He is a physicist, a cancer researcher and journalist. He has, in his downtime, devised a mathematical formula which will help you and I determine the viability of conspiracy theories. Test that out for yourself. We'll put his article on the Sunday Extra webpage. You can feed your favourite conspiracy theory into that, like Jonathan Green is an alien. Is that mathematically plausible? You find out. This is Sunday Extra here on RN.